Blog Talk Radio.
Much less detail the podcast on a Saturday night, October 4th, 2014. I'm Dre, my co-host Jay will be joining us shortly. Feeling good, ready to do these picks. Got to go on a Saturday night, a rare Saturday night. My partner Jason, a little under the weather last night, but as always, between our schedules and illnesses and everything, we managed to get together, do the show, do the picks, have some fun, maybe insult a few people along the way. You never know. Jason, what's going on?
I came to the conclusion after my little bout of some stomach issues last night that I may have been spiked by Jason Whitlock after the comments I made about him on our last show.
Uh-huh. So that's what you get. You're mouthing off and people sneak in your house and set you up for all sorts of things.
I'm telling you, it cannot be coincidental that right before our show, something happened. And, I'm glad this wasn't, I'm glad we scheduled the show for Friday night instead of Saturday night, because you might have been doing this by yourself with me texting you the picks tonight otherwise. So I'm ready. I got a lead to uphold here. I'm trying to stay ahead of you.
You weren't out in the rain last night with your peeps?
Last night.
Or Thursday night, rather?
No, that would have been snow last night.
Oh, Lord.
I woke up this morning, we had snow on the cars and on the rooftops. It is...
Wow.
It's early. It is really... We've been talking all summer long about this really cold summer that we had up here. And last night, snow. October the 3rd, and we had snow.
That's insane.
Yeah, and you go about a couple hours north of here, and it actually accumulated.
That's too much for me. I'm out of the northern part of the country, and at this time of year, I'm glad I'm out of the northern part of the country. I was actually trying to comment on your team, your local team Thursday night. I referred to it as last night, but out in the rain, weren't out in the rain watching your team beat the hell out of hapless Minnesota Vikings squad.
Yeah, that was kind of sad. I mean, there hasn't been a good Thursday night game yet.
No, 4-5 games and they've all been shit.
And they'll still outdraw the World Series.
Yes, correct. And this is why, if anyone was wondering if Roger Goodell was going to get fired anytime soon, not a chance. This league makes way too much money. There's nothing they can do. The NFL is absolutely bulletproof. And I told you when it first happened that they were, and he was bulletproof, and nothing has changed. I believe I had that one, and nothing is going to change for the foreseeable future.
But it's a good start to our week. I think we both saw the squish. Pretty obvious squish, and it was never in doubt.
But one of us saw the squish in such clear vision that he ran to the waiver wire in the Buster League to pick up Christian Ponder, who delivered the Holy Grail, the pick six.
Oh, he did. Yes, he did.
Oh,
good move on your part.
Thing.
Yeah, I was a little late getting to my moves on Thursday night, so I got screwed. However, in my regular fantasy league, I did have the benefit of Eddie Lacy.
That's nice.
That was, yes, that was nice. I mean, that's about the best word you could say for that. As much as I've been tempted to bench him after the first 4 weeks of just utter shit, that was a really, really sweet effort on Thursday night. 24 points. I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it.
Minnesota Vikings once again proving to be the solution to many real and fantasy team problems.
Right, when we thought that would be the case with the Packers playing the Bears, and they never really got off running the ball against the Bears, which is surprising because everybody gets off running the Bears. So it was really worrisome, you know, then going and playing Minnesota. But, boy, the Packers were having no trouble opening up holes in that Vikings defensive line. And Eddie Lacy was actually running a little more angry. He'd been, maybe because his line play had been so bad so far, he was kind of getting the tippy-toe thing going and the dance moves before he would get to the line of scrimmage. And I have to say, that game on Thursday night, he was hitting the hole very hard.
Well, he had his energy saved up. He had been barely used the first 4 weeks, so he was
That's
ready.
True. Yeah, when you're running, like, you know, for nothing every game, you're fresh.
That's right.
That's a good sign for the Packers. That gives them we've talked about this a lot between us, especially that Super Bowl run they had. Obviously, we weren't doing the podcast back then, but any threat, the Packers don't need a running game. They just need a threat of a running game. They just need the other team to waste time looking at the film of the Packers running the ball, because then that's less time they're not watching the film on Aaron Rodgers shredding your defense.
And that gets back to the point you just brought up about it was surprising that Lacy didn't get off against the Bears, because everyone gets off against the Bears running. But that's the thing. Aaron Rodgers knew what he could do against the Bears. The Bears run the cover zero. The Bears don't cover his receivers. You don't have to run the ball against the Bears, at least if you're Aaron Rodgers and you know how to exploit that horrible pass defense that they always have. So yep. you don't need a running attack, you know, and like you said about when Green Bay went to the Super Bowl, you don't need a rushing attack when you have Aaron Rodgers back there. You just need the defense to prepare for the rushing attack and waste time coming up with defensive formations to try to stop your runners. Meanwhile, Rodgers is just throwing over the top to his receivers and having a good
Green
time.
Yeah, Green Bay is one of those teams that does not need a running game. It just needs you to think they need a running game. Like, they're going to run the ball. We can't let them run the ball. And as soon as you think Green Bay is going to run, it opens up everything for them. And this could be sort of the start of their run. I think they've kind of muddled their way through the first few weeks, and now against the Bears and now against the Vikings, you've kind of seen it all come together a little bit more.
The Frankie Goes to Hollywood team, the Green Bay Packers, just R-E-L-A-X. Although maybe that's not the right reference, we're not dating ourselves here or anything, are we? No, not in the least. Well, actually, dating each other would be more like it if we're talking about Frankie Goes to Hollywood, but that's another
story. Oh, whoa, hey-o.
Hey-o! This is an intriguing week five we got here. We 15 games instead of, was it 13 last week? So, the odds, of course, are better. You're going to have more matchups to look at that are going to be intriguing, but it's really intriguing. There are some very
games. We actually had games not make the cut. Usually we struggle for highlight games. This week we had too many.
Yeah. They should have to slough off some. We have to start down in Texas. We have to start with this tremendous battle. I can't even believe I'm saying that, but 2-3-1 teams. There's no way you could have predicted this. Houston, after going 2-14 last year, Dallas, after starting off with that Tony Romo game against the 49ers to start the season, looked like they were just going to have a crap year. The end of Jason Garrett, the end of Tony Romo, the end of everything. And here they are, both sitting at 3-1 and ready to do battle for the state of Texas. It's going to be a humongous game down there. The atmosphere is going to be just incredible. 3-1 Houston Texans. 3-1 Dallas Cowboys. Betting public is going with the Cowboys. Houston gets 6.5 points down in Big D. Jason, what's it look like to you?
Well, this one was tough, just, you know, because you're thinking about the routes that these teams took to being 3-1. So I'm going with the team that I think has taken the more impressive route to getting 3-1, and to me, that's Dallas. So I'm going to give all the points, and I'm going to take the Cowboys here. I think they're a improved team for sure over what they were last year. Houston, I'm still not sold on Houston. I think they got a little paper champion in them. They've won a couple of nice games. They really needed that J.J. Watt pick six against the one that ended E.J. Manuel's starting tenure in Buffalo. You know, and what, and yes, while Tony Romo was capable of pulling off something just like that, I think Dallas is way too talented. They've had some really nice wins. That win, you know, they had the big comeback win against the Rams. They obliterated the Saints. And other than one really bad half of football against San Francisco, Dallas has been pretty good. You know, there's a lot of parity in the league. So, you know, had they played different opponents, this could have possibly gone a different way. And, I mean, it's like, you know, by the end of the year, it's why you play 16 games, it kind of all comes out in the wash. You know who's good, you know who's not. But Houston has still not impressed me. I mean, just, I'm just not sold on this Texans team at all. And I need to see more. If they could go into Dallas and hang really close or even win this game, maybe that would impress me a little bit more, because Dallas is a little, is a lot more high-powered. They're running the ball good. They're throwing the ball good. I'm definitely sold on what they're doing right now. Doesn't, I don't think, I don't know if they can sustain it all year, because I think they're, you know, we're still waiting for that defense to kind of implode. But they're obviously with the same group of guys, they must be getting coached up. Something's changed that the group that looked so bad can look good now, and I was really impressed by what they did to the Saints. So on the strength of that, and they're at home here, I'm taking the Dallas Cowboys.
I struggled a little bit with this one as well, but eventually I came to the decision that I think more so waiting for the Dallas collapse, which we know is inevitable. There's no chance this team finishes better than 9-7 at the end of the year, probably another 8-8. Because that's just what they do. More so believing in that than trusting the Houston Texans and buying into anything that they're doing correctly. I'm going to wind up taking Houston to go and win this game. I don't have a specific stat for every game this week, but this one I got to get to right off the bat. I'm looking at two quarterbacks that have a history of just yakking all over themselves. I'm looking at Ryan Fitzpatrick for Houston. I'm looking at Tony Romo for Dallas. And in their four games so far this year, their stats are much more similar than one would think. Fitzpatrick is at 65.2% completion percentage, 902 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 5 picks. We know what happens when he tries too hard to win games. That's how the that interception total racks up. But in those three wins, he hasn't tried too hard. Really, most of those picks came in that loss. I think he had three picks in that Houston loss. Tony Romo at 69.5% completion percentage. Pretty fair amount better than Fitzpatrick. I didn't say they were completely similar. I said they were closer than one might think. 936 yards is only 34 more than Fitzpatrick. 7 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. Look, I'll give Tony Romo all the credit for turning it around after that first game.
Yeah, three of those interceptions were in the first half against San Francisco.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And Fitzpatrick, three of those 5 picks were in one game. So
right.
So yeah, basically in their one loss, they've shown that disastrous streak that they're capable of, and in their three wins, they both kept it together. And that was my point, is that they've actually played similarly so far this year. I give Tony Romo all the credit in the world. I didn't think he would play even close to this well after that first game. But, again, Fitzpatrick is actually hung in there. He's comparable. And I think the Dallas defense is the type to let Fitzpatrick off the hook when he makes some of those terrible decisions and terrible throws. I think Fitzpatrick is going to hang in there and have a pretty good game and actually hang with Tony Romo back and forth. And I trust the Houston defense and J.J. Watt to produce the defensive play that produces the big error to lose this game. I think Houston's going to force Tony Romo into the big mistake that's going to cost him this football game. You look at DeMarco Murray against J.J. Watt, against the Houston front seven. That's going to be really fun to watch. Houston hasn't really stopped the run this year. Somehow I think they're going to be up for this one. I think DeMarco might be in for a little tougher test than he might think. But I'm really, really looking forward to this game. I still think it's incredible that they're both 3-1 just considering where they were, where they came from last year, and just in Dallas to start this year. But yeah, I think it really is going to come down to, does Fitzpatrick or Romo yak it up? And I think I'm going to trust Fitzpatrick not to be the one to yak it up. Andre Johnson's got an ankle injury. He's, I think, listed as questionable. I think he's going to go. He might be playing the Megatron role from last week. He might be more of a decoy than anything else. So I'm getting a tingling feeling about DeAndre Hopkins. That smells like a huge game waiting for him against that Dallas secondary. And I'm going to take the Texans to go to 4-1 and shock the world. That doesn't mean I've got them making any huge waves as the season goes on, but I think I'm going to trust them to be a little more legit than the Cowboys. On to our second highlight game of the week. Baltimore and Indy in the Art Modell Bowl, yet another rendition of the Art Modell Bowl. The Ravens going to Indianapolis. Baltimore-Cleveland is the Art Modell Bowl. I get confused because Indy and the Colts moving from Baltimore to Indy. Baltimore and Joe Flacco at 3-1. Indianapolis and Andrew Luck at 2-2. I'll tell you right off the bat, I love the points in this game. Whatever the over-under is, I think this is going to be a back-and-forth shootout affair. So 3-1 Baltimore, 2-1 Indy. Baltimore is a 3.5 point underdog at the Colts. So Indy giving up the hook in that one. And I'm going to take the hook and the points and the straight up win. I'm a little high on some underdogs this week. I'm getting a little crazy, but I'm going to take the Baltimore Ravens to go into Indianapolis and pull off the upset and get the win. I guess I'm a little intoxicated by what Steve Smith did last week against Carolina, but when he's good, he's really good. And he's had to be good because the other receiving threats for Baltimore haven't shown up yet. Torrey Smith and whoever else is in that receiving core have not gotten it done so far this year. Steve Smith has sort of carried the Baltimore Ravens from a wide receiver standpoint. And Indianapolis giving up 8 yards per pass attempt this year. Yeah, I think Steve Smith will continue to carry the Baltimore Ravens. I think Joe Flacco is going to have a huge day. I think Andrew Luck, you always are afraid when you pick against the Colts because Andrew Luck can always come right back and have a huge day going down the field. That's the number one passing offense in football right now, the Indianapolis Colts. Andrew Luck is coming off of two straight 400-yard passing performances, and it wouldn't totally surprise me if he put forth a third one because Baltimore hasn't stopped anyone in the air so far this year. But I think it's going to be one of those back-and-forth affairs where Baltimore comes out in the end because I think their running attack is much better equipped to carry the day and get the tough yards than Indianapolis. I don't quite understand why the Colts are still insisting on starting Trent Richardson as their running back. Ahmad Bradshaw is not going to the Hall of Fame, but he's certainly been a better runner so far this year than Trent Richardson. So I think that's a mistake that needs to be corrected, probably will be corrected soon. I'm looking at also how protected Joe Flacco has been in the pocket this year. He's only been sacked 3 times all season long. And I believe all 3 of those were in the first game of the year. I think he's on a 3-game streak of not getting sacked. And what's Indianapolis been bad at historically over the last several years? Rushing the quarterback. They lose Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, and it's been a struggle. And I think it's going to continue to be a struggle. They've only got 8 sacks so far this year. I think Flacco is going to hang back in the pocket and have all day to do whatever he wants to do. Those 400-yard games that Andrew Luck racked up, they were against Jacksonville and Tennessee. This is a little tougher competition, I think. So I think Baltimore is going to come in and be tougher than the Colts are used to. You can get lazy when you play bad teams like that and just wind up, you know, having some muscle memory loss when you don't have to really put forth your best effort. Both those games were over, like, instantly. So I think Baltimore is going to provide a much stiffer test and come out in the end with the tough victory.
This is good because we're going to have one of those weeks if this keeps going. I've got the Colts here. I've got the Colts here easy. You know, this is one of those where I don't think the records tell the whole story. I mean, you've got Baltimore at 3-1 and the Colts are 2-2. But those two losses that the Colts had early, I mean, that was the Broncos. So this, I mean, so that's a, you know, that's a good team. And then the Eagles, and we all know what the Eagles are. That was a complete shootout. One of those huge Eagle comebacks, so we know what they're capable of doing. And then those the last 2 weeks, I think, is more, yes, that's been against bad opponents. But I think what happened was you had the Colts, who was every, you know, a lot of people's, you know, hot shit team. They should win this division. And getting down 0-2, I think, was sort of what woke them up. It's interesting that you talked about the whole Steve Smith thing. I think Steve Smith was living for that rematch against Carolina. I don't know if they're going to be able to keep up that intensity this week at the Colts. You know, so to me,
I don't know. Steve Smith's pretty much that intense all the time.
I mean, he's an intense guy. I'll give you that. He's an intense guy. But Baltimore, they've had some nice games and they've had some nice wins. That win at Carolina, I don't know what's wrong with Carolina, because they've been laying some really, really nasty eggs all over the place. You know, the Ravens, they lost to the Bengals, and what really was, I think, a little more jitters on the Bengals' part, even letting the Ravens into that game, because Cincinnati dominated that game, just couldn't get into the end zone, and kind of allowed Baltimore back into the game. So again, this is, you know, I'm not completely sold on what the Ravens are doing. I think we both underestimated them last week, but that was also a case, I think, we overestimated the Panthers. I think we expected a bounce back from them that never came, and we did not expect the intensity that Steve Smith was going to. We didn't realize that he just wanted to, like, murder everybody on the other side of the field, and it was personal. This isn't personal. They're going to play Indianapolis. There's nothing personal going on here. I think this is going to be about talent. I think this is also about the Colts are still somewhat desperate. I think we saw that the last 2 weeks. We saw that urgency from them. They got out, especially after blowing that huge lead against the Eagles. They got out. They got out big, and then they just kept their foot on the gas. I think they're going to do that here. Even though Baltimore's a, you know, it's a step up in class, it's not a, you know, they're not that top tier team. I think the Colts are in a higher class than I think even Baltimore is. So I think the record is really the only thing that's kind of keeping this line down. I think if Baltimore, you know, if the Colts had won another game or another two games, that they'd have a much larger spread here than what we're getting. So 3.5 to me almost feels like, you know, my favorite thing to say now, a value pick. I really like, cause, and they need to keep it going because they cannot afford to go to 2-3. You know, you don't want to, you know, 0-2, you get back to 2-2, but you don't want to start that backward slide again. It's, you know, they don't want to be playing catch up all year to Houston. I don't think they will, but you still don't want that feeling. And I think Indy has got, they've kind of found the formula, and it looked good the last couple of weeks. Sometimes you can take a couple of blowouts against bad teams just as confidence builders. So I think they're back to, you know, maybe they're feeling it a little bit after that 0-2 start. So I like the Colts.
I'm hoping they'll get confidence building back once again, because they'll play Jacksonville again. They'll play Tennessee again. That's the beauty about that AFC South, is they'll be able to bounce back again after they go 2-3 or whatever their record winds up being. They can still build on those crap teams and get back in it. Maybe it's not the Art Modell Bowl. Maybe I should call it the AARP Bowl because of Steve Smith and Reggie Wayne commenting about their advanced ages and their advanced stages in football. But they're still getting it done at their advanced age. They're still at least early on, two of the more productive wide receivers in football.
Yeah, and you talked about the lack of production out of the other Baltimore receivers. I don't think the Colts have had that problem. They don't lean on Reggie Wayne.
Oh no,
Andrew Luck can get the ball to everybody, and I think this is just one of those where I think the talent just shines through. I think they're just the more talented team, even though the defense is. They're not going to win their games because of their defense. They're going to win because of Andrew Luck. So I hope I don't get hooked here, because I feel like I could. But I gladly would take. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I think they keep rolling.
All right. On to our third highlight game, the Arizona Cardinals and the Denver Broncos are both coming off of byes last week. Arizona remaining undefeated through the bye week, very hard to do. Denver at 2-1, and this is definitely the game of the week as far as I'm concerned, because these two teams, Denver, of course, has the highest of aspirations, and Arizona with that 3-0 start, everyone's got their eye on them. How good are they? Can they keep it up? Can they really keep it going? Looks like they're going to have to keep it going with some more Drew Stanton under center. Carson Palmer still with that nerve thing. Looks like he's not going to take the field tomorrow. So it's going to be the Cardinals and Drew Stanton, the undefeated Cardinals, +7.5 at Peyton Manning and the 2-1 Broncos. Jason, what's your pick?
I'm wondering, I've never gotten a clear explanation on this whole Carson Palmer injury. So I'm wondering, if you look in the injury report, does it just say out nerve thing? Because
it does. That's Bruce Arians' official doctor's diagnosis. It's the medical
nerve thing.
It's under the in the advanced diagnostic book of injuries, the nerve thing.
Well, fortunately, it's not Dave Wannstedt, because it'd be, he's got a nerve. It's a nerve
thing.
Sorry, I had to mute myself there. I had a little cough. I think this is the
game.
What
you get for imitating Wannstedt.
It gets the throat stuff going. I think this is the one they won't be able to overcome Drew Stanton. I love that Arizona defense, but they are going to Denver. They're playing Peyton Manning, and that offense coming off of a bye. It also is that Denver defense hasn't been the best so far, and we were talking about how they slapped all those new parts together. I think they've had another week to practice. I think this is the week where we get to see the full Broncos team. We get to see, is this going to be a team ready to take a run at another Super Bowl against a really, really good? I've been very impressed. I have nothing but praise so far this year for the Cardinals. But I think this is the one where having Drew Stanton under center kind of comes back to bite him in the ass. He's not going to game manage this one. Or, he's gonna need to make big-time plays to win this game. I think he's going to make a lot of big-time mistakes in this game. I think Denver blows the doors off Arizona in this game.
I'm going to have to concur with you on this one. Drew Stanton at Denver at Peyton Manning, no, can't do it. Can't go with that one. He can go into the Giants Stadium and beat Peyton's brother Eli, but I don't think he's going to go into Denver and beat the man himself with that pop gun arm of his. It's actually interesting. You got two entities, one on each side, that you look at Drew Stanton on the Arizona side and you don't expect much out of him, and then you look at Monty Ball on the other side, on the Denver side. This might actually come down to which one of those two performs the worst, because what Monty Ball is doing or not doing at running back for Denver so far, that just sets the Denver offense back so far. It's basically the same situation as last season when they wanted to make him or Ronnie Hillman the man at running back, but neither one of them were good enough at blocking for Peyton Manning, because that's such an important thing. If you're the running back in there, you have to hold up in pass protection and make sure no one touches your MVP quarterback. And that's why Sean Marino got most of the early carries, and he turned that into, you know, a Pro Bowl season and a contract with Miami. Well, Monty Ball still is not holding up his end of the bargain. He's still not blocking very well for Peyton. He's not running the ball very well. Denver is 27th in the league in rushing offense in yards per game. And they're going against Arizona in that front seven that's played so well, so much better than either one of us gave them credit for. So Monty Ball could actually lose this pick for us and possibly even this game if he continues to underperform. But he had a bye week to, you know, bone up on his blocking schemes and to hear the chatter, I'm sure, that's been going on in Denver about his lack of production so far this year. I'm not going to predict him to come out with a big game tomorrow, but I am going to predict him to do a little better and do just enough to help Peyton Manning along, because Peyton can't do it all himself. As great as Peyton Manning is, it's not gonna work out for him this year if he doesn't have a running game to balance off of. There's no way Peyton sets all those records last year if Sean Marino isn't killing them on the inside with his tough running. But I'm going to go with Denver, and I'm going to give the 7.5 along with you. I will just assume, because they're going against Drew Stanton, that he's not going to be able to keep up with what Peyton Manning does. I guess it's a matter of how good do you really think Arizona's defense is. You can't possibly expect Arizona to put up more than, you know, 10, 13, 16 points on the offensive end. And can Denver score more than, you know, 20, 23 points to cover that number? And I think they can. I think they can to make it to 30 on Arizona's defense, but I don't think it's going to be easy, but I'm going to predict them to do it. But, yeah, I think it might be all up to Monty Ball. If he's not getting it done, expecting Denver to make it, you know, into the mid-20s or 30s, with no running game and no blocking help, That might be a tall task. So it's a game to keep your eye on just for that, just to see if Monty Ball can perform better and put Denver in a much better position than they've been so far this year. You talk about Tom Brady struggling in the passing game. Looking at Denver being 10th in the league in passing offense, that almost doesn't look right to me. That I'm looking on my paper and, you know, that just does not seem – you know, Washington is fourth in passing this season. Really? Then Denver's 10th? Really? Come on, is that going to last? No way. So I'm going to go with you on that one and take Denver to cover the 7.5 and win by double digits. But I'm a little scared on that one, I must admit.
I'll tell you what, if Arizona comes out of this with a win, I think we'll both bow down to the Bruce Arians. I mean, they'll have earned. They're going to earn this one if they win. Now, and here's the thing. I don't think Denver has the – even with Peyton Manning, I don't think Denver is going to be putting together 80- and 90-yard touchdown drives with regularity. I am really seeing Arizona and Drew Stanton are going to maybe get behind early. It's going to put him in a really bad spot, and you're going to see some short field offense from Denver, and I think that's where this game is going to get out of control.
I like the sound of that. I'm all for it. Our fourth highlight game, speaking of New England and Tom Brady, Sunday Night Football, another very intriguing matchup, the equally undefeated Cincinnati Bengals. A lot of teams' number one pick on your power rankings if you're into that type of thing. But the 3-0 Bengals go into the much beleaguered New England Patriots at 2-2, and all the gloom and doom. They've been the media subject this week for the most part, as far as NFL talk, because is Tom Brady done? Is the dynasty done? Is Bill Belichick, has he lost his touch? Should he no longer be GM? So Cincinnati, as impressive as they've been, you can't take too much love away from New England and Tom Brady, because I think most people know that eventually it's going to turn around. They just don't know when exactly. And because of that, New England is not nearly as big of an underdog, as bad as they played, as one might think. Cincinnati goes into New England as only a one-point favorite. That's basically a pick 'em. And I'm going to pick the Patriots. I think they're going to turn it around starting this week. It's just a matter of feel, as far as I'm concerned. I certainly don't feel great about the pick, but I just got, you know, it's going to happen. It's going to happen eventually. Tom Brady, the light goes on, the light bulb goes on over his head, and Tom Brady turns it around, gets on the same page with his offense, and you just look up and go, what happened? How'd that happen? Look at, oh my goodness, New England has 27, 30 points. How'd that happen? I think it's going to happen this week. It's a bold pick because Cincinnati is sporting a pass defense that's giving up a laughable 5.4 yards per pass attempt, which is so low, it makes me chuckle just looking at it. And I'm going to take Tom Brady to go in and carve him up anyway, because it's going to happen. This is exactly the type of game where it happens, where no one's giving him a chance to do it, and the light just comes on, and he does it. That's how this works. Every year, the Patriots look terrible early on. Tom Brady looks terrible early on. People wonder, are they dead? Is the dynasty over? And he picks it up and finds a way to win. And I think I'm just going with the reverse psychology. Like, this is the one-pass defense that you don't want to face if you're struggling on offense. And yet I'm going to take them to beat Cincinnati anyway. Cincinnati is rested. They're coming off a bye. They've got all the momentum. You know, everyone thinks they're the hot shit, that they're the top team. And I just think New England's going to knock them off. You know, who's Cincy beat? You know, when I look at who they've amassed that 3-0 the record against, you know, Baltimore, you know, as inconsistent a team as you can get, and, you know, as we remember from week one, Baltimore didn't exactly play well, yet found themselves in the lead late, and then Cincinnati said, okay, I guess we got to go Andy Dalton to A.J. Green through the air, because that's what we do, that's what we fall back on doing. And then Atlanta on the road, which we know what kind of a shithouse that is, and the Tennessee Titans. I'm not trying to say Cincinnati is completely a paper champion, but come on. I'm not really impressed. Another small factor might wind up being a big factor. Cincinnati already giving up 5.1 yards per rushing attempt, which is a lot. And they're going to be missing their stud tackle machine, Vontaze Burfict, who is still recovering from a concussion. Thought he was going to be ready to play this week. Nope, he is not going to make the trip. He is not going to be there. And I think that's another part, just like Denver with Peyton Manning. You need the running game to balance out if you're going to have your passing offense rebound. And I think New England will get it going on the ground tomorrow night to help out Tom Brady. I think Stephen Ridley is going to have a nice night for the Patriots. I just got the New England bounce back starting tonight. Smiles all around. Patriots all happy, happy. The drama's all over, all in one game, because that's just how it works out for them.
Well, I'm about to say the two words that you probably were not hoping that I would say. I concur.
Whoa.
I have New England here too, and I'm not looking this as the start of the Patriots resurgence at all. I'm really looking at this as this is going to be one isolated instance of the Patriots putting it together. I think if you're Cincinnati, this is not the spot that you wanted to go to New England, where they're sort of wounded. You know, yeah, Cincinnati's coming off of it. If Cincinnati goes in there and blows off the Patriots' doors, I think this is another one we'll be like, yep, okay, you guys earned it.
Yep.
We're on board with you now. But, you know, some of those bugaboos have been there for Cincinnati. You know, Andy Dalton in a big spot, hasn't been the best in prime time. And this is the gut check for the Patriots. You're up against the wall. It's Tom Brady. They're questioning him. They're asking Bill Belichick if he should be starting Jimmy Garoppolo because he looked good in garbage time in one game.
Come on.
Yeah, I mean, so this is that spot I just don't really think you want to be anybody right now going to Foxborough. I think they're going to look good, but I don't think it's going to be that indicator of future greatness for the Patriots. I think it's going to be sort of their game to shine in prime time, but I don't necessarily think it's going to be that they've fixed the problems. And I also look for Cincinnati to play a little tight. You know, for whatever reason, I think that they, you know, I have them going to the Super Bowl, but that doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, they'll be better at the end of the year than they are now.
Yeah, this is
they
your
still
team.
This is my team, but that doesn't mean I have them going undefeated. I didn't pick that. instead of going 16-0 and running all the way to the Super Bowl, that doesn't happen. Hasn't happened in 42 years, so I don't think it's happening this year. So, you know, you're going to have some hiccups, and I just think this is that spot where they play a little tight, and it doesn't help that they're going and playing a team that's got pride, and that's what the Patriots are going to play. I think the Patriots are going to play with some pride, especially after they just got housed last week. You know, that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So I wouldn't want to be anybody coming to play them this week. We both agree. But I think you see this as sort of like a springboard. I think this could be a one and done. I think this could be a one-off for the Patriots. They could win this game, and everyone will think they're back, and then go lay an egg in their next game. So I'm picking this game for this game. I'm not looking down the road at all, because I think at the end of the season, Cincinnati will still be a better team than New England.
Yeah, they got housed on a Monday night, so they've had a short week to have to get over that. I'm sure it's still a little fresh on their mind. But, yeah, I got to think that it's got to be some sort of a springboard, because it's Cincinnati. If you come in and beat that defense, you're building on something. You just are. That means you don't beat them by accident. And I think that's just going to be the start of something big for New England. I don't have their upcoming schedule in front of me, but again, we know that division, the Jets and Miami and Buffalo, some combination of those teams. Yeah, I think that's going to be a lot less formidable than Cincinnati. So if you overcome against the Bengals, I think you don't have a choice but to springboard from that and build from that and put together yet another division champion. But we will find out. And now the rest of an intriguing Week 5 in even more less detail. Got a lot of very interesting games to get to this week. We will start with our former hometown Bears going into Carolina. We've got a couple of reunions this week. They're visiting their former linebacker Chico Rivera and the Panthers. Cam Newton awaiting them, and the Bears are 2-2, they are a 2.5-point dog at the 2-2 Panthers.
A lot of teams this week where there's this theme where you've got some teams that really need a gut check. The Patriots kind of need that gut check, and the Panthers really need that gut check, because the Panthers have been embarrassed 2 weeks in a row now. And if they've got anything, if they're going to recapture any of what they did last year, they got to do it against this completely depleted Bears defense. So I'm liking a lot of these gut check teams this week, and this is one of them. I'm taking the Panthers, and that 2.5 feels nice, because I'm having a feeling this could be a field goal game.
Oh, that would be killer. So 4 out of the 5 weeks that the Bears have played, undisciplined, athletic quarterbacks who don't have it all together, 4 of those 5 weeks. Started out with E.J. Manuel. Here's why they lost to Buffalo, because of the run game. It wasn't because of how great E.J. Manuel was. It's because they can't stop the run. Beat Colin Kaepernick, beat Geno Smith, came up against a professional quarterback last week in Aaron Rodgers. Now they go back to another undisciplined quarterback who doesn't have his shit together in Cam Newton, and he still looks very hurt, hobbling around, looking like complete shit in last week's Sunday night game. I'm going with the Bears. I think they're going to take advantage of Carolina and Cam Newton not being all 100%. I think they're going to take advantage of the bad Carolina run defense so far. I think the Bears know they haven't ran the ball nearly as much as they need to. And I think the one big factor that you usually count against the Bears, which is their terrible run defense. Well, Carolina this week is lining up this motley crew of running backs to go against the Chicago Bears. Tell me if you've ever heard of any of these fuckers. Darren Reeves, Fozzie Whitaker,
no.
And
no.
Chris Ogbonaya.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, former Brown buster.
Is that Forrest Whitaker? Are they lining up the ghost dog back there?
They might as well.
Oh wow.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna take the Bears. Carolina having a gut check, I don't really trust them. But again, after all of that, folks, remember I'm 0-4 picking the Panthers so far this year. So what the hell I know? I just
You're also 5 games behind me.
I just wasted 2 minutes breaking down a team I don't have any fucking idea what they're going to do. Cleveland and Tennessee, one of the bad games on the schedule. It's a rare week where you don't have that many bad games. You seem like you have more good games than bad ones. So one we probably don't need to spend too much time on, Cleveland Browns at 1-2 coming off a bye are +1.5 at the returning Jake Locker and the 1-3 Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Browns, even though that's 1-2. That's a really tough 1-2. I mean, they are like snake bit, and they've played some good teams and hung really tough. And I think if they're going to get off at all, they're going to do it at Tennessee, who's not very good.
Tennessee is just awful. The Titans are just awful. I like Jake Locker, but good God. I'm going to take the Browns as well. Jordan Cameron. Brown fever. Jordan Cameron, the tight end, comes back.
I had some of that last night, by the way.
We don't need to know about that. You were under the weather. That's all we need to know. We don't need details.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And I'm not going to spend any more time on that one. St. Louis at 1-2 is a 6.5-point underdog at the always interesting Philadelphia Eagles at 3-1, and I wish it would have come through by one more point last week, but I guess I did predict Philly's defense to collapse correctly against San Fran, and unfortunately it was a push, but Philly gets to go back home and give 6.5 to the Rams.
Yeah, if you're gonna bounce back, this is a good week to do it. I mean, the Rams are total shit. I mean, is this Austin Davis again?
It is.
Oh boy. Yeah, I don't think Philly is going to need to come back in this one, you know, because we always talk about how they need to – they can only win, I guess, if they come back.
Right.
And last week they were up against San Francisco. I guess they didn't just know what to do, but they looked really bad at San Francisco, who, you know, they're not a team that I'm all that sold on either. I think that's well documented with us. But if there's a team I'm definitely not going to go with, it's the Rams here. So I'm taking the Eagles. Squash.
You know, Philly wasn't just struggling against San Francisco. As you pointed out to me, the offense didn't score at all. That offense?
No. And LeSean McCoy has not done anything this year. And, you know, he might have that Eddie Lacy game this week. Watch out, LeSean McCoy.
That's very possible. But you're going to love that I'm not buying it right now, and I'm going to take the Rams to win.
You know what? Just circle this one for me, all right?
Oh, stop it. Here's what I'm looking at Philadelphia. I feel like Philly is the team I actually do have a grip on what they're doing. That defense is going to wear out again. I have to pick against the Eagles when I see a team taking the field that has a decent offense that's going to wear out the Eagles' defense. And you laugh at Austin Davis. I went and looked up his numbers. Listen to this. Austin Davis, he's not terrible. 72.3% completion percentage. 251.3 yards per game on average. 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Ladies and gentlemen, Austin Davis. The Rams are scoring 30 points tomorrow.
Wow. And they'll still lose by 10.
You wish. Your Atlanta Falcons are on the road. Oh, boy.
You know what? Don't even bother, Giants. I can't take them on the road. You can tell us the line and everything like that, but I have the Giants here. Until Atlanta shows up in a road game, I'm not taking them. So I've got the Giants.
The Giants are a 4-point favorite, so you're going to give the 4 against the Falcons there?
Yes.
Okay.
I have to. They got killed by Teddy Bridgewater and Matt Asiata, some guy I've never heard of running the ball for the Vikings.
They gave up 300 yards in the air to a guy making his first NFL start. That is quite incredible. And yet the Giants are so damn unpredictable. I'm going to take Atlanta in the points, even though I think the Giants will probably win the game because Atlanta just doesn't win on the road.
You are getting cute.
I'm going to get cute. I'm taking the Giants to win by a
really
field
cute.
Goal.
Do you remember when the Falcons went to New York in that playoff game and scored a safety and that was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
like 28 to 2 or something like that.
It was awful. Yeah. It was horrible. Yeah. I think they were winning 2-0 at one point as well.
Right. They scored the first 2 points of the game and refused to score after that.
Yeah.
That was the offense getting shut out, just like Philadelphia last week. Yeah. That might happen again because Atlanta on the road so far. Ugh. But the Giants,
It's my team, and I would love to see Atlanta go on the road and show up. They did not show up against Cincinnati. Their offense did show up, however, at the Vikings. I mean, they did put up 28 and gave up 41 to a rookie quarterback. No, sorry. This is another one where you got to go and show me something. I'm taking the odds here that they are just shitty on the road. And it's sad because they're the more talented team. They're the better team. They just don't play outside very well, it seems like. I don't know what's going on. This game was in Atlanta. Atlanta would murder these guys.
Yeah, they'd be a 5 or 6 point favorite, and they'd probably win by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's mental. I don't know. I can't tell you because I don't remember Atlanta as always being a bad road team. They haven't always been this bad on the road, but right now, dreadful on the road.
Lovie Smith in Tampa Bay showed us something last week, and my new nemesis, my arch nemesis, Mike Glennon. The 1-3 Buccaneers, which I didn't know when they were going to get a win because that's how bad they looked their first three games, but now they got a win. So they can take that win, and they can take 10.5 points, and they have to go into the Superdome to face the 1-3 New Orleans Saints. I think the bettors know who the better team is there.
They do, and I'm still taking Tampa Bay.
Oh.
I'm going with the Glennon. I have seen nothing from the Saints. The Saints are... They're just out of whack. And Tampa Bay went to Pittsburgh. How did they do that? They went to Pittsburgh and won a game with Mike Glennon, and that offense looked like mediocre. That's all, you know. That's all they needed. They're competent. Just show up and play. I think the Saints' allegedly improved defense has looked terrible. So I think that's enough for Tampa Bay to just hang around. Not saying they're going to win. Wouldn't be shocked if they did, but I don't think I just think it's enough for them to hang around and cover the 10.5. Love the hook here.
But now wait a minute, you're praising Tampa for going in and beating Pittsburgh on the road, and you don't know how they did it. I thought you thought Pittsburgh was the drizzling shits. I thought you think they sucked.
I do think Pittsburgh sucks, but you know what? New Orleans ain't much better right now.
No, they're not. But I'm going to take them anyway and give the 10.5 any day now, Saints. Come on now, any day.
We're waiting. That division is ripe for the picking. Is somebody going to want to win that division? Anybody?
Somebody has to eventually.
Think about this. If they win and the Falcons and the Panthers both lose, because you think the Panthers are going to lose, I mean, is anybody over 500 in that division?
No, they're not.
You were talking about the drizzling shits. That NFC South has turned into the drizzling shits.
Couple small points that I like the Saints that also go in my favor. I think Tampa, the rookie receiver Mike Evans looked good. Looked like a target that Mike Glennon would like a lot, and he's not going to play tomorrow. And this is their third road game in a row. I'm with you. I don't know how they pulled out that victory in Pittsburgh last week, but to trust them in their third straight road game to do something as bad as they looked those first three games, no, I'm not going to trust that. Buffalo and Detroit. Kyle Orton steps to the fore and gets the starting nod for the Buffalo Bills. Kyle Orton receives 6.5 points on the road at the 3-1 Detroit Lions.
That's not enough. It's Ortman. Give me a break. Forget it. What are they thinking? They probably lost the locker room by making this change. That team in the tank, they're done. Buffalo may be our first mail it. They may mail it in before the Raiders mail it in. They're done. Give me the Lions.
I'm afraid that you might be right on that, but I'm going to take Buffalo and those points, and the reason why is this. I said I'm going to be skeptical of Kyle Orton because of his possible motivation. If you read certain reports, you see that he's not really motivated to play football. He's just in it for the paycheck at this point. And yet I'm going to trust him to cover the number tomorrow because at least he's going to take care of the motherfucking football. EJ Manuel, the reason he got benched is because he refused to take care of the fucking football. It's the first job of a quarterback is to take care of the football. So whatever Kyle Orton does, I admit that he might shit the bed and not give a damn and just throw it away and not care. So if that happens, then I'll be the one with egg on my face. But I got to think he'll take care of the ball better than EJ Manuel just because he's a veteran and just because you know he's got the history of taking care of the football at least. So just based on that, I'll take Buffalo to cover the number. Pittsburgh is in Jacksonville. Those Steelers we just talked about, they're inconsistent. They're 2-2. You don't know what they're going to get. But Jacksonville, we know what you're getting. You're getting the worst team in football. So Pittsburgh gives 6 points on the road at the 0-4 Jaguars.
I hate to take the Steelers at all this year. I really don't like them, but I have to. Jacksonville's just too banged up. They got nobody. I mean, Blake Bortles, we won't know how good he is because there's nobody around him. No running game, no healthy wide receivers. If they win this game, you could put Pittsburgh. You know what I saw, that bad stuff I said about Pittsburgh? It's true if they go into Jacksonville and lose this game. But for this week, for the pick purposes, I'm taking Pittsburgh. I don't have the balls to take the Jags.
I don't either. I'll take Pittsburgh. I'll give the 6, and I'll add that if they find a way to lose this game, I'll say even if Blake Bortles keeps the Jaguars close to Pittsburgh and covers that number, Mike Tomlin needs to start looking for putting his house up for sale. He needs to start looking for realtors. You cannot let the Jaguars stay close to you if you have any aspirations at all this season because they are just horrible. Here's another interesting game. We almost looked at it as a highlight game. It's the Alex Smith Bowl. Kansas City and Andy Reid and Alex Smith going into San Francisco, into Levi's Stadium, taking on the 2-2 Niners. Both teams actually at 2-2. Kansas City, something about the 5-point spread when San Fran is at home. They managed to push last week, and here we go again. Kansas City plus 5 at San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm thinking, who showed me something last week? And that was the Chiefs. I mean, the Niners won. Oh. They didn't give up any offensive touchdowns. The Chiefs, as long as they keep those two running backs healthy, they are going to hurt some teams. Because what they did to the Patriots, that little kids should not have watched that. That should have been rated like TV-14. That was bad. They're going to carry that travels. That's the thing. That's not something that doesn't go on the road with you. Those two guys, they'll show up no matter where you go. I'm taking the Chiefs to win.
You know what else travels is Alex Smith's anger at coach insane Jim Harbaugh basically getting rid of him.
Little Steve Smith scenario here this week.
The first moment that Harbaugh had a chance to get Alex Smith out of there because of injury, he said, "You got to go so I can get my boy Colin Kaepernick in here." I think Alex Smith goes in and knocks off the 49ers and outperforms Colin Kaepernick. But, of course, I have to say that a big part of that is, as I said, when Vernon Davis is out, that passing offense looks completely different, and Vernon Davis with a back injury looks like he's going to be out of tomorrow's game. That is a really big loss, as always, for San Francisco.
San Diego. We can go rapid fire for these last two picks.
Jets at 1-3, and Geno Smith, who maybe should be benched, plus 6.5 at those 3-1 Chargers.
I think we'll see Michael Vick in this game, but it's going to be too late. So I'm taking the Chargers because the Chargers are looking really good. I think we both underestimated them going into this season. I like the Chargers here.
And they're looking great with no running attack at all. Donald Brown is taking like 2 steps and dropping immediately. And yeah, I'm
Edith, like,
oh, Rashan Salam, maybe. And yet I agree with you. I will take San Diego to cover the number because the Jets defensive back still sucks. So Phillip Rivers is going to go off again. And the Monday night game, the world champion Seahawks coming off a bye on the road. They give 7.5 points at the 1-3 Washington Redskins.
I'm actually taking the points here. I like Whoa. The Skins. I'm taking the Skins. Seattle going to the from west to east. I'll just say I'm taking the Skins. I'll talk a little bit more about this after the break.
All right. I got to go with the champs and give the 7.5. They're going to give Kirk Cousins such a hard time. Oh, boy. We are just cutting it as close as we can cut it, aren't we?
Yeah, there were more games this week than there were last week, and it's funny because we've been doing this for a few weeks now with the longer show all this year, and every time we do this now, I'm like, how did we do a half hour pick show?
I know.
We're a little less. Structured with it now. I think we're a little less disciplined now with the hour than we were when we had the half hour, because with the half hour, there was not a wasted breath in one half hour.
Yeah, we didn't have the time.
No, it was this, I think this, you think this. I mean, it was like robotic in the efficiency that we had to do that half hour show. And now we can actually, it's weird the freedom that we have. And then we can carry that over into the after show. We're not making our picks in the after show like we didn't realize we were doing last year before we found out that we were getting the sniper hit us at the half-hour mark. There's an interesting corollary this year that's been setting up where the Thursday night losers are coming back and looking good in their next game. And Washington was our most recent Thursday night loser
looking at home.
That's the other thing, too. Think about it. Thursday night losers have been getting their doors blown off.
And then they're coming back and winning.
Tampa Bay
gets destroyed
by Atlanta. Comes back and wins.
Packers get embarrassed by the Seahawks in their first game.
They come back and win.
So I'm trying to find one out here.
Washington.
Really embarrassed
by their Giants on that Thursday night.
They're coming back.
Let's see, deal with the embarrassment of Thursday night blowouts.
And I know it's the champs, but I really think Washington's not as bad as the Giants.
Nobody expected that, what the Giants did to them. Where Kirk Cousins just all of a sudden turned into, he channeled it into Carson Palmer and just decided to get picked crazy. So I think they'll tighten up the ship a little bit. I think this is going to be a really low-scoring game. I mean, ugly low-scoring game. But sometimes those are fun.
Yeah, sometimes. But I'm scared to death to take the Redskins right now. That's the one home team that's gotten housed on Thursday night. All these Thursday night waxings that have been horrible to watch that you need to cover your children's eyes. Washington's the only team that got waxed like that at home. I understand that's a division game, and things get a little goofy sometimes when you're playing a division opponent, but still, no, like you said, no one saw that one coming. No one expected that at all. I'm going to obviously watch this Monday night game to see how they bounce back and respond to that, but the reason I'm so afraid of them right now is because I don't know if maybe the league has caught on a little bit to Kirk Cousins. You get a chance to start, you get that week 3 game where he came in for RG3. I'm sorry, he came in against Jacksonville in week 2 and lit up the Jaguars. And then comes in week 3, performs very well against Philadelphia. And then week 4 with the Giants, who just house him. Did they learn something? Is this something, maybe they picked something up on film, and maybe now Kirk Cousins won't be nearly as effective as he has been? I guess I'm kind of worried about that. If any defense is going to pick something up on film and exploit that, it will be the Legion of Boom coming off a bye week. So that's pretty much why I'm just scared to death. I think Seattle might just beat Washington within an inch of their lives on Monday Night Football. I think that one might get ugly.
This is an interesting week. I think this is one of the more, so far, fun weeks that we've had. There's a lot of good games. There's not a lot of dogs this week.
Right. There's fewer toilet bowl games where just two bad teams are facing each other. There's some really interesting action out here.
Yeah, you know, and we disagree on a competitive number of games, which is always fun. You know, it's not like when we have one of these weeks where we just disagree on like three games or four games. So we've got some disagreement. I see us being, you know, I have a feeling this could be one of those weeks where we just kind of we're pretty close to each other in terms of the games.
We're disagreeing on eight picks this week.
Yeah, this feels like a 4-4, doesn't it? It just really does. Like, nothing much changes. But, hey, you could sweep me here and have a lead.
You keep saying that. You keep putting a whammy on me like that.
Well, I have to.
It's definitely something to keep an eye on, these games this week. I was trying to count up real quick here the number of games between teams that are 500, that are both 500 or over, and it's a lot. I'm not even counting the Thursday game because, believe it or not, as bad as Minnesota played, they were 500. They were 2-2 going into that game. So not even counting that, that leaves 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 8 games this week between teams that are both 500 or better. That's unbelievable. That's that NFL parity, I guess, spreading things out, because there's quite a few 2-2 teams in here as well. But, you know, but that counts. But that's a whole lot of games, you know, between teams that are theoretically, you know, mediocre at worst. Yep.
Well, it's interesting because we could be looking at one of those years where we get to week 14 or week 15 and you've got like three quarters of the league with a shot
at 500. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it could be one of those years. It really could. Yeah. You know, we're both looking for there to be no undefeated teams after this week because we both have Denver and we both have New England.
Yep.
So, you know, wow, when was the last time you can remember no undefeated teams after week 5?
Yeah, it's been a long time for that.
I mean, you're usually carrying a team into, like, you know, they're 9-0, 10-0, 11-0. I mean, we could be looking and going into week 6 with no undefeated teams. That's wide open. This whole thing is going to be wide open. You've got every division. Is there one division that's already, like, you like, yep, that's the team that's going to win that division? I mean, you would, you know, it's funny because we talk about, like, hey, well, we know the Colts are going to win their division. Well, you know what? Houston's ahead of them.
They are.
And we don't see that probably playing out long term. But there are very few divisions where you can just look at that division right now and just know with 100% certainty who is winning that division.
You can't even say that about the champs because they're at 2-1, and Arizona is sitting above them at 3-0 at the moment.
And the Niners, as much as I don't like them, are still hanging around. They're going to be there. You know every division's kind of got that team that's not going to win it, but you could look at almost every division and make a case for two or three teams as a shot. And a lot of times by now, you just kind of know that they're going to win that division. They're going to win that division, and it's not so clear this year. It'll be fun. It'll really be fun.
I know I already talked about it because it's a highlight game, but I just have to bring it up again. I can't believe that the winner of Houston and Dallas is going to be 4-1 after tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a very good likelihood neither one of those teams gets above 500. Dallas hasn't done it in a long time because they're 8-8 every year.
Right.
8-8 and miss the playoffs every year.
And might well do it again this year.
Yeah. Any baseball playoff stuff jumping out at you so far?
What the fuck is up with the Kansas City Royals?
Yeah, they've got that sort of like... They've got that little mojo thing going on right now. They won't go away, right? They were that team that just wouldn't vanish during the regular season. Every time you looked up, you're like, how are they in it? I mean, they were winning. There was a chance they could have won that division with the Tigers. I mean, come on, really?
Yeah.
And they're just small balling the heck out of everybody. Their defense. Did you watch that game one with all those the crazy catches? And it's just like, you know what? They don't have any pitchers of note. They do have a good bullpen, but they're playing a ton of defense, and they're keeping the scores close. And they're, I gotta give it to them because, yeah, could that get them to the World Series? Probably not. But it's fun to watch. I mean, it's that little underdog story that we don't get a lot, you know. Isn't it refreshing that we don't have the Yankees or the Red Sox? I mean, really, isn't it nice? I mean, it's probably not getting ratings, but isn't it nice to see something different?
It's weird, I know that much. I keep expecting to turn on the TV and see, you know, the Red Sox. They're playing tonight, right? They start their playoff series tonight, right? Oh, wait.
Yeah, so it's we'll see. I mean, I'm not even convinced the Royals are going to get out of this series because Anaheim will wake up. There's way too much offense on that team for all these guys like the Trouts and the Pujols, for all those guys to keep not delivering. So, you know, if that Anaheim offense can wake up, these games won't be close. And it doesn't take much to get your offense on a roll. But if the Royals can, I mean, if they can pitch and keep playing that defense, maybe they won't let the Angels offense get going. But I have a suspicion that they will.
Isn't this like when Dusty Baker manages in the playoffs, that no matter how much success the team has, you know, eventually somehow that managerial style is going to find a way to fuck up games and lose the series. Doesn't Ned Yost have to lose this series eventually for the Royals doing this small ball bullshit? Who manages like that and wins?
Well, how else are they going to play? First of all, isn't he managing his players? They're not hitting the 3-run homer.
They can't.
They don't hit homers at all. I mean, Mike Moustakas hit that home run in game one, and it was like, this is his first home run in 2 months. And yeah. this is a quote-unquote power hitter. They have no power. They have nobody in that lineup 1 through 9. When they come up, do you think they're leaving the yard?
Their three-hitter is Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah.
Who does that?
I mean, Lorenzo Cain's a nice 270 hitter, but he has no power.
That's your
no
three.
Power.
That guy. That,
yeah.
I'm just shaking my head. I don't know.
But you know what, though? You look at that lineup, though, and I'll tell you what, every single one of those guys, for the most part, can run. And that's how they won the play-in game. They ran the A's out of their building.
That was just crazy. Every time a guy took off, you're thinking, okay, what's Ned Yost doing now? He's sending this. And they made it. They got in there. And they just kept getting in there.
Can that win you an entire series? Maybe not, but they have a lot of fast guys. They have fast guys coming off the bench.
Right, that you never heard of.
You got Jared Dyson coming off the bench, played every day, would probably have 40 or 45 steals if he was an everyday player. Because every time he's had a chance to play, because Lorenzo Cain's always hurt. So when Jared Dyson's out there in center, he's flying around the bases. Now, you'd say a lot of these guys, yeah, that's great, but you can't steal first.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, it's working. I just don't know, can this really play out over a 7-game series? Because I think once they get the taste of losing and Anaheim finally gets up off their ass here and wins a game, hopefully, that you kind of figure it out. Because I really don't want to see the Royals in the next round because you know they're not going to the World Series, right?
That would be the lowest rated championship series in years, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a World Series out there that nobody wants to see, and I'm guessing the Royals are one of those teams. Do we want the Royals and the Cardinals? I'm not thinking. We don't want the Missouri I-70 series, do we?
No, that would be too exciting. There's got to be a worse matchup than that. I'm just trying to think of the National
League
teams. Well,
on the NL side, I mean, Washington.
The Nats and the Royals. Over under of every game would be 2.5. Good God.
Wow. Yeah, the Nationals and the Royals would not be a good one.
Baltimore trying to be a team of destiny as well. How about Buck Showalter pulls Delmon Young out of his ass and let's go up there and hit a three-run double and then win the game for us?
That's a pretty good team. You don't think of a lot of their pitching. That's another bullpen team because their starters, you know, Chris Tillman, he's nice. Chen, none of these guys are going to go out there. You'd think of them as aces, you know.
No.
But you can if you turn over a lead. You know, Britton and Miller, they've got guys that are just going to shut you down. But once again, if your starters can only go five innings, this is, you know, you're playing for another month yet. And you need some guys to go deep in games. Although, because you're going to burn that bullpen out. That's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Yes, I think Oakland found that out, unfortunately.
Well, Oakland figured out that trading their best offensive player was probably a bad move.
Their cleanup hitter?
Yeah, then the guy who you traded him for goes out and gets lit up by the Royals in, oh, my God.
Well, John Lester, I think, pitched okay. I think the bullpen came in and got torched.
He was still charged with six runs.
Yeah, yeah.
The only way you get charged with six runs is by giving up runs and putting guys on base.
Right.
You don't accidentally get a six hung on you.
But your bullpen's got to have some inherited runners, you know, stranded for you. I mean, you got to help a brother out a little bit there.
Yeah, and he got no help.
Speaking of no help, on the other side of Baltimore sending Delmon Young for a pinch hit double is the Detroit Tigers bullpen allowing a pinch hit double from Delmon Young.
Yeah, they're mystifying, aren't they?
They can't help but have a bad bullpen every year. It doesn't matter who they bring in. It doesn't matter who they trade for. There's a litany of guys throughout the years that they thought was going to solve their ninth inning problems and just set everything on fire.
Well,
Phil Koch, Fernando Rodney, you know, and now Jabba Chamberlain. And
that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, you think of the guys that the Orioles are trotting out there, and then you turn around and you see Jabba. that's not good.
Well, you've never been a Jabba fan.
Never.
All that hype he got as a Yankee.
Oh, Jabba rules and all that junk. I mean, excuse me, it never panned out. Wasn't he the heir apparent to Mariano Rivera, remember?
Right, yeah, he was the next big thing. That's why they had the Jabba rules. They wanted to protect that great arm.
Right.
Because he's going to be the man.
That worked.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I feel sorry for Kamish because he's got to watch his team just implode again. It's a bullpen. It's always the bullpen problems with them. You know what they got to do is eventually they just got to say the hell with it and throw Verlander out there as the closer. Do the John Smoltz thing that Atlanta did. Because
Verlander seems to be losing it as a starter.
Yeah, just give in. I know they don't want to give in. I'm sure Verlander's got a big ego. He doesn't want to give in and call it a day. But he's been worse and worse and worse as a starter for the last like 3 or 4 years. He's been steadily worse. Just go ahead and call it a day and send him out there and be like a two-inning type closer guy. He can be his own setup man even.
Because you know he's going to go out there for one inning with everything on the line. He's giving you 100.
Right. He's going to blow 100 on the gun. And,
yeah. He's giving you 100 with movement.
Oh, he's going to be he would be the next Smoltz. He would be nasty out there. But they don't want to do that, and it's going to cost him. You know, it might cost him a title or two. Because I think if they'd have done that already, they wouldn't have these issues. They wouldn't have to rely on 73-year-old Joe Nathan as their closer, who was an unmitigated disaster this year. They wouldn't have to rely on Jabba as the setup guy. I think that would solve a lot of their problems. I really do.
Well, on the other side of that, though, since we're both sitting here, neither one of our teams are in the postseason. Wouldn't you rather at least be watching your team in the postseason?
Yeah, well,
even if
something to be said for that.
Yes, I would rather. I remember the Cubs with those last couple of years there that they made it. They just went in and got swept in the playoffs. Hey, you know what? We won the division. We made the playoffs. Yay us!
Oh, the Lupinella years. Eh, I don't know what happened out there.
Yeah, but that was against all those NL West teams. They couldn't win a game.
The lasting image of Ted Lilly serving up a shot to Chris Young and immediately throwing his glove down in frustration before the ball even left the yard.
The ball was barely off of his bat, but it was such a jack shot.
He just turned and took his glove and fired it to the ground.
I'm just noticing this here. I'm checking on my computer. We're missing the San Francisco-Washington game right now. It's in the top of the 17th inning.
What? Get out of here.
It's 1-1 in the 17th inning.
There you go. Mets Royals over
in
under
Washington.
2.5, I'm telling
you. Well, first of all, we do not want a West Coast team in the World Series because you and I remember watching all those West Coast games. They were always going on until like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, they start the games at the exact same time, no matter where it is in the country. So the problem with the West Coast series, and I'm remembering Anaheim and San Francisco when you say that, is the sunset is fucking up the batter's vision at the beginning of the games. So every game was guaranteed to be 0-0 in the fifth inning because it takes until the fifth inning for the sun to get to a position where we're not right in the batter's eyes because games aren't meant to be started at 5 o'clock local time in the afternoon like that. The stadiums aren't built like that. You know, that was a problem with all those West Coast games. So, Giants, Royals would be terrible, and Mets Royals would also be terrible.
Yeah, but I think just in general, are we just assuming it's going to be terrible?
In general? I was still holding out hope for my Cardinals-Tigers prediction just to say I was right, but yeah, that probably would be terrible too.
I'm still hanging on here for my Angels-Nationals one, and that's not good so far either. But, for us, at least look at the bright side, all four of our teams made the playoffs that we picked.
Yeah.
This was before the season even started.
Well,
not an easy feat.
They add some playoff position. They keep adding playoff spots. Eventually, it's going to get like the NBA where half the damn league is making it into the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I think it's time for us to say goodnight because you're starting to cut out bad. Let's finish this on a good quality audio night. Because we've had two good shows in a row.
Yeah.
Two very clean shows in a row.
You are listening to this because you're on the archive page of our live show page, which would be blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, or because you subscribe to our show on iTunes. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. You can always email the show. InMuchLessDetail@gmail.com is where you would send that. And all our picks are going to be up on the blog within the next, 10 minutes or so after I close the show down here. And the site for our blog would be InMuchLessDetail.blogspot.com. That's where you're going to go to follow our 8 differing picks on tomorrow. Very interesting week 5 coming up because I tried to cut into that 5-point deficit, 5-game deficit that I have against Jason. And we'll see what happens. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to these games. So he's Jay. I'm Dre. I knew I was going to screw that up eventually. This is In Much Less Detail podcast. Enjoy your football tomorrow, and we will see you for our recap show, hopefully Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Central.